Welcome to Global Data Pod Research Wrap. I'm your host, Nora Santivani, and joining me today is Michael Hansen. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Good, Nora. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. So we've just published our Global Inflation Monitor. So that's really the reason we're recording this podcast. And, you know, we want to touch on probably a broader themes as well of what implications these inflation readings at the start of the year are having for central bank policy. We've had 2 months of, you know, upward surprises in inflation numbers, and it doesn't really seem to have left its mark on central bank guidance and communication, which remains quite dovish. And we can argue about that, Mike, but the sense I'm getting is certainly in the forecast that central banks have, you know, staff projections and their own forecasts suggest that they're looking for quite sustained disinflation here based on belief that, you know, we have pretty strong gravitational forces getting inflation down towards 2%. But that doesn't really seem to be validated in my mind by, you know, a broad range of things like labor costs, short-term inflation expectations, moves in commodity markets, you know, some of the survey data which we can get into, which to me suggests that near-term risks are probably still to the upside. We put out a piece at the start of the year arguing that after the material disinflation we saw late last year, we would get a stall in the disinflation process in the first half. And, you know, arguably the first 2 months of the year, that's exactly what we got. We're looking at global core CPI printing at a 0.3 month on month in both January and February. And that has pushed the 3 month annualized run rate up to something like 3.5%. And our forecasts as well have followed higher. So, you know, we're sitting here at the start of the year, not so much start of the year now, we're heading to the end of the first quarter with core inflation pretty sticky around the 3% mark, as we broadly predicted. How are you feeling about the incoming data yourself? Does that more or less sound like
a right way
to think about it?
Yeah, I do broadly. I think there's a couple of things you touched on that are interesting. I think the first is not only are central bankers very optimistic that we're going to get significant disinflation, so too are our economists, right? So our bottom-up forecasts, particularly in the DM, have some pretty significant deceleration in inflation as we get through, you know, either the first quarter or the first half, depending on where you look, right? And to your point, the data, at least the leading edge, are not strongly pointing in that direction. It doesn't mean it can't happen, of course. We can talk about that. But an implication of that you alluded to is we've had some pretty material upward revisions to our forecasts for core CPI. You know, if you kind of look, and an inflation monitor has these tables, right, where we track our own forecasts revisions. And so while we continually think that inflation will be lower, you know, looking back to, say, the second half of last year, the third quarter of last year, inflation comes down to the fourth quarter, comes down to the first quarter this year, comes down to the second quarter, where those numbers end up have all been revised up over the last several months to one extent or another. And certainly, if you go back a year or two, we were looking for much bigger disinflation than we're seeing now, right? I think the second thing that's interesting when you focus on the central banks is their forecasts, at least of the Fed and the ECB, are not clearly pointing that way in the near term, right? So, I mean, the we don't get the staff's forecast beyond it being leaked by Powell for the next month ahead, right, for core PCE. But we do know that the committee median forecast for core PCE at the end of the year actually went up 0.2, and now it's now above 2.5 as opposed to being below 2.5. And then on top of that, we know the ECB forecast didn't incorporate the February release. And so if they had, I think our European team thinks that maybe that would have put a little more upside into their numbers. Who knows? And then, of course, there's all these technical issues around the early Easter and how that might distort some of the measurements of the European data specifically as well, right? Potentially bumping it up.
Yeah, I was going to mention that I just saw the email from our Euro area team. And it looks like this early timing of Easter is going to distort the HICP core prices. And particularly for March, we're looking, at 0.3% month-on-month SA. So another pretty firm reading, and that would leave the core OIA unchanged at 3.1. And, you know, that's another implication we're seeing here is that in year-on-year terms, That move down has likewise stalled at around 3.6, so well above three. And
right.
So I think this near-term firming in a number of different surveys, import prices, again, we can talk more in detail, to me suggests that, you know, we're probably not going to get a decisive break below 3% in the near term. Now, maybe we can talk a bit about the sensitivity of various monthly CPI prints. I think you've been writing about this, that really, we need these monthly core CPI gains and core PC gains to moderate, right, down to 0.2 in order to get the Fed sort of optimistic projection. And if you get 0.3s instead of 0.2s, you're really sitting here with a 2.7 plus, right?
Yes. Yeah. You, I mean, if the there's a big debate over what the Fed needs to see to actually start cutting in June. You were absolutely right up front that both the Fed and the ECB in particular have given reasonably strong signals that they'd love to go in June and need to basically be dissuaded. And the question is, how firm does inflation need to be to dissuade them, right? So what we wrote in yesterday's Daily Economic Briefing is that, you know, to get down to something like, say, 2.5% annual run rate, 12-month run rate on core PC, which is something that Chair Powell had mentioned earlier was kind of something the Fed was looking at, without specifically committing to 2.5, admittedly. But that's kind of been a number that the market's kind of fixated on. You really do need, after getting what he suggested, we're going to get 2.8% for the year-ago rate on Friday. We also think that consensus thinks that. You basically have something that rounds to about 0.3 to get that. Now, he did say that the staff forecast was well below 0.3, but the you can only be so much well below and still get 2.8 right for the year. So 2.27 is the weakest it could possibly be. If you get that and then you get a series of 0.2s, you can actually get by the June meeting where you'll have the May print down to about 2.4% on a year ago basis. And that might be enough to trigger your first cut in June, right? Which is our baseline forecast, right? But if you continue to print, to your point, something in the kind of basically just 0.3, and we are tracking 0.32 ourselves for Friday, you don't get anywhere near 2.5 or below. And in fact, if that continues throughout the year, which it may or may not, we don't think it will, but there's some risk, obviously, you're actually back above 3% in the latter part of the year.
Yeah, right? Yeah, so I think that's right. And I think
the small movement at the end. That's the thing, I think.
Exactly, that's the point. And I think the bar for the Fed not to cut in June is high, but they're also not completely on autopilot, so the data will matter. Hence, the data watching that we're doing is absolutely critical here. And with that segue, maybe we can talk a little bit more about the details of what we're seeing in the data, the actual CPI numbers through February. I think for me, another important message is that not only are we tracking the overall stickiness in core inflation above 3%, the key elements of our view are also tracking, right? Which has been really twofold. First one is that the phase of global goods price deflation has ended here. And then the second one is that service price inflation remains sticky at elevated levels. On the core goods side, we are now actually running at a plus 0.4% annualized pace in the 3 months through February. And that's a pretty significant swing from a minus 0.5 we had through November. If you take US car prices out of the equation, then the swing is even more pronounced. And we're running almost, you know, at 1% annualized for global core goods inflation. So, you know, that's been a pretty meaningful swing. You know, monthly increases have been now registered for a couple of months, zero ones. And so here, I think the question is, how much further can we go in this move higher in core goods inflation? We don't think there is a very strong case for a surge in, you know, core goods inflation here, but a lot of the surveys and, you know, short-term signals that we're getting point to further modest firming in core goods inflation. You know, things like, you know, the PMI surveys, we've seen a steady drift higher in the output prices, input price indices. Supplier delivery times had been trending a bit longer, not so much in the past couple of months. I think that's been moving more sideways. The shipping costs as well have stabilized, but they're still double where they were in early December. So, you know, my sense is that if you add on top of that the rise in oil prices and broader commodity prices, then I think for me, the near-term pressures are still a little bit to the upside. We're getting some confirmation of that in the rise in import prices across a wide range of countries, most notably the US, but also, you know, your area, a bunch of EM countries. So I think directionally, for me, the near term, you know, bias is still for a little bit of upside there.
No, I think that's right. And obviously, you know, you pointed out that in the US, you're seeing kind of one very idiosyncratic aspect, which has been auto prices, which are probably used car prices will probably continue to be weak, but not nearly as weak as they had been, right? So there's a number of things that I think more generally in the inflation outlook looked to be, from our perspective, unusually weak late last year. And part of, I think, our call, as you pointed out correctly, it seems to be tracking, is that those things would firm just to something more normal, right?
Yeah.
And I think we're seeing that. And I think what the market has been challenged with is, I think a lot of people late last year, including potentially some central bankers, were effectively extrapolating off of that really sharp slowing into the end of last year, further into this year. And the data, of course, has moved in a different direction, more in this, you know, a bit of a bounce up, maybe bouncing a little bit more than we think is ultimately going to happen, but consistent with this normalizing as something that's going to be consistent with a slow grind to get from where we have been to back ultimately to targets for too many of these central banks is around 2%. And so I think that has forced some meaningful rethinking. I think that's an important factor behind the repricing we've had in the markets in terms of how much central banks are going to cut, you know, this year and how quickly, right? Because I think after the February, you know, certainly the strong January print and then continued firmness in February. And, you know, as you alluded to, and we certainly see in our own forecasts, particularly for the US and the Euro area, 3-month run rates are well above the OIA rates, which suggests that they're going to be pulling those things up in the near term, right?
Yeah.
So I think this idea that you probably may have been not uncommon people to perhaps overestimate or overextrapolate how quickly inflation was coming down, given the numbers we saw late last year. We're now getting some confirmation that was perhaps a bit overdone, and in line again with our view that we're going to see some firmness for at least a little bit here going forward.
Yeah, that's right. And then compounding this, you know, rebound in core goods prices, we also have energy prices moving up, and these are kind of feeding off each other to some extent.
Sure.
So, you know, falling energy prices, they were pretty big drag on headline inflation in the fourth quarter. Now that's swinging to a boost through February. We see 3% rise in the annualized run rate. And if Brent peaks in the high 80s to 90, which is a very clear risk here that our commodity research team have highlighted, that would then lift the energy CPI further to something like 10-15% annualized by the second quarter. That in turn would pose upside risk to our current forecast, which assume that headline inflation actually moderates in the second quarter to something like a 2.7% annualized rate and 3.2% OIA. So I think that's an added upside risk, which is, you know, probably not fully embedded in our current forecast, and probably not the central bank forecast either.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, I mean, in the U.S., your gasoline prices are already up 15% since the beginning of the quarter, whereas in the fourth quarter, they basically dropped about 20%. So not only does that have material impacts over headline and perhaps with some spillover into you know, core measures, but I think more indirectly, it influences consumer spending behavior, right? So we had much stronger consumer spending, which, you know, in the fourth quarter for the U.S., for example, is not going to be as strong in the first quarter. Still, I think it's going to be reasonably solid. But if we continue, to your point, have upward movements in energy prices, not just U.S. consumers more broadly, but European consumers, part of our core view is they're due to be spending a fair bit more, but they've been hesitant. Certainly rising energy prices aren't going to help on that front.
Mm-hmm. Right? That's right.
So something we want to watch on both of those pieces of the story.
Yeah, and then let's tackle the elephant in the room, Mike, which is the stickiness in services inflation, right? And I think this is the main topic, I think, which creates some controversy. And I think, you know, for me, a lot of the expectations by economists, and maybe the Fed is that you get a pretty significant moderation in services inflation. Some of that is due to rental inflation coming off. But again, that's not really what we're seeing in the data, at least not in the first couple of
US
months.
Right now.
Exactly. It's the opposite. We have strong growth in service sector activity. We have still tight labor markets, elevated labor cost gains. And so based on all those things, we had made the argument at the start of the year that we weren't going to get a follow through from the slide in goods inflation to service sector disinflation. And again, lo and behold, that's what we've been seeing in the data.
Tracking.
Services inflation globally, it had slowed to about a 4% pace late last year. We argued that some of that was due to sort of technical distortions in the euro area and the US data, which then duly corrected higher at the start of the year. It, you know, if anything, it's probably overcorrected, if you like. And we're now sitting here with a run rate of above 5%. Now, we have seen a couple of countries where services inflation has finally started to slow. So I think what we're also seeing at this point is maybe increased differentiation across countries a little bit. I mean, in much of EM Asia, we see quite clear evidence of easing services inflation, and that's aligned with, you know, wage inflation and income growth slowing down in that region. In DM, Canada and Norway stand out with quite material slowing. And, you know, Canada's one central bank where we've emphasized the risk of an earlier rate cut, right? Partly on that basis.
They've been hawkish. The irony of this
know.
Whole thing, the
if
regions that you're
back,
talking
yeah.
about are the regions in which we were somewhat
yes.
less confident in rate cuts,
yes.
right? Norway, yeah. we pushed back already. Canada, while we flagged this risk, the rhetoric has actually been later. And we've kept our call for them to go in June, even though the data make a strong case for coming in April. And even in EM Asia, there's been some talk about, you know, possibly scaling back a little bit, the extent of which might get freezing.
Well, so I want to say for Norway and EM Asia, like part of it is the FX weakening,
of course, yes.
concerns around FX weakening. But for what it's worth, just to point
that
out
is
that...
is it not?
Yeah.
Right? From the central bank's perspective, that weakening of the currency is something that they are focused on as a concern. There's a whole separate story about Japan, by the way, where inflation did surprise the upside. It looks like it has encouraged them to kind of junk everything all at once and move to more orthodox policy. But again, there's this concern about the currency that may be actually forcing the Bank of Japan to do even more than the market's looking for. But yes, that's true. First line consideration here is not the decline in inflation. It's the protecting the currency.
Right. And you know, to that point, we have had a combination countries where there's been a combination of the two, where services inflation has accelerated and currencies are at either weakening or at risk of weakening.
Right.
South Africa comes to mind, where, you know, where we have actually pushed back our expectations of the first SARB ease to September from May. And, you know, a lot of that we attributed to the jump in services inflation, but clearly there's concerns about the currency as well. You know, in parts of EM, it feels like central banks are slowing down the pace of easing. That I think that's partly a reflection of the fact that the easing cycles are getting a bit more advanced, a bit more mature, but also a reflection of the fact that, you know, the stickiness in inflation that we've been highlighting here, and then the currency moves in some cases, I think, are compounding those concerns. One thing I that sort of jumps out for me is, I mentioned the weakness in the underlying inflation, services inflation in EM Asia. At the same time, that's a region where I think the upside risk to inflation coming from higher oil prices is very pronounced. And in fact, headline inflation has jumped due to that, you know, rise in oil prices in some places. You know, Taiwan, again, is the one I would highlight, where the central bank surprised with a 12.5 basis point rate hike. So I think if oil prices continue to move up, even though we are getting this softening in underlying inflation in some cases, you know, some central banks will have heightened sensitivity. And I think for me, again, EM Asia is the place where that risk is probably most pronounced.
Sure. And the other thing you mentioned in there earlier in the discussion was in terms of the idea that there may be some further persistence in services inflation is the fact that certainly, at least amongst the DM economies, labor markets still remain reasonably tight. They've certainly not as tight as they were 6 or 12 months ago, but they really haven't normalized at this point. And we've published a couple of different brief discussions of this in the DEB over the last several weeks, that you know, you're still seeing reasonably high demand for workers in business surveys. You're still seeing elevated vacancy rates in a number of the DM economies, right? So things have cooled, but it's not clear they've cooled enough to really be that extra impulse to push core services down to something, you know, much more aligned with targets, particularly once we take away that disinflationary or deflationary force that we had for a time coming from the goods sector.
What's your personal take on the rental inflation outlook for the U.S.? Because I think a lot hinges on that, given how large its weight is in the CPI.
Well, for the CPI, for sure. It has a lower weight in the PCE, yeah. So it's going to be somewhat less of a factor for the Fed. But it's a fair question. I mean, it's certainly a surprise to the upside. The industry-level data that you have available, by and large, not everything, but by and large, is pointing to some scope for further cooling. Now, there's some signs that maybe, like, for example, the Zillow rent index has stabilized, maybe inched up a little bit. But given the lags that have been normally been built into the way in which that's constructed, those aren't really going to, should not really be hitting rental numbers until much, much later this year, right? But there's a possibility, and this is, you know, something I want to look a little bit more into myself, that what's going on here is these things tracked fairly closely. You had very wide gaps open, and effectively, there's a sense in which that those gaps need to close, and that some of that closing may actually happen with firmer rental inflation than we currently have in our forecast. The San Francisco Fed, for example, has published something suggesting that. So I think it's kind of an open question, because if you just look at the changes, kind of the, you know, the forward rental contracts, they and build in the appropriate lags, as it were. They do seem to be pointing to this idea that we had some weirdness in rental inflation. There was a whole brouhaha over what the BLS did in January and then how they communicated it, or realistically didn't communicate it very well. But regardless, that would still point in the direction that rental inflation could come down. But if there's this idea that effectively there's been a level shift and there needs to be some catching up that happens in the more lagging things like the OER measure that's in the CPI, then maybe we end up with stronger rental inflation for a time. So I think that debate is still perhaps somewhat unresolved.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're pushing back on the idea that rental inflation does moderate. I think the stronger view we're taking here is that we see these global impulses, which are suggesting that goods price deflation has ended, and our bias there in the near term is that continues to firm. And I don't think that view is maybe fully embedded in, you know, the market's expectations or central bank forecast, and that firming in goods price inflation will, I think, broadly offset any of this inflationary impulse that we get from moderating rent inflation, for example. So that will leave overall
moderating somewhat less.
Exactly. So that leaves us with, as I said, core inflation in the first half, sticky around the 3% mark. And then the whole separate question is how we get that further leg down we have in our forecast for the second half of the year, right? And through 2025, which in our forecast gets down pretty close to 2%, not all the way to 2%, but, you know, a pretty big further step down. So maybe that's a topic for a separate podcast, Mike. Open a new can of worms.
That's right. But to your point, it is, I think, an important part of the assumption that central banks are going to be able to continue on easing paths. And so while I think a full discussion of this, as you point out, is a whole other podcast, it does raise this question about whether we're going to get as much easing as markets have been pricing, or may even still be pricing if you look out far enough. And so mentioned some of the views we've had that are a bit outside of consensus and that are tracking. This feels like it's another one of those potentially. We'll see how it plays out.
Exactly. Yeah. So all in all, it feels like there's probably going to be enough here to get DM central banks started with rate cuts around the middle of the year. But then it's a really big question mark in terms of how much easing they can actually deliver. All right. Shall we leave it there, Mike?
That's great.
Great. Okay. Well, thanks for joining. And thank you to our listeners for tuning into the Global Data Pod. We hope to continue the conversation on the next episode. This communication is provided for information purposes only. Please refer to JP Morgan research reports related to its content for more information, including important disclosures. 2024 JP Morgan Chase & Company, all rights reserved. This episode was recorded on March 26, 2024.